Welcome to the Essential Skills for Humaning podcast, where we explore the fundamental abilities and insights that make us better humans. Here's your host, Christina Eanes.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of Essential Skills for Humaning. I'm your host, Christina Eanes. And for today's episode, Robin Harkless is joining us to discuss having tough conversations. Welcome, Robin.
Thank you, Christina. Glad to be here.
Oh, I'm sure there's a lot of people who are excited to listen in on this one. But before we do, can you share a little bit about your background?
Yeah. So I'll start with the present and then I'll go back to the beginning if that's okay.
Sure.
So I currently serve as the director of a program called Oregon Consensus. You might guess that it's in Oregon. We're housed at the Portland State University, under the National Policy Consensus Center. And it's a lot of words that basically say that we are an organization that does collaborative governance work. We provide services and expertise to help governments and communities work through difference, come together to solve problems, come together to do collective action, and or come together to hear what the broad community thinks or feels about certain issues that matter to them and are important to the public. So I've been a practicing mediator, public policy mediator and facilitator for, gosh, going on 25 years or more. And sort of found my way fortuitously to that place, along a journey of wanting to actually get into the field of journalism. So, I was, just an undergrad, completed my undergrad at Portland State University, was looking for a journalism program to do a graduate school, and then I found my way into mediation. So I sort of found my way into this conflict resolution space that was a little bit odd for me. And so I would like to just kind of go back to my roots. Mm-hmm. I was born and raised in South Dakota, very rural state, as you all know. Mm-hmm. I was a middle child, kind of sandwiched in between a brother and a sister, and then a huge Catholic family on both sides of my family. So lots and lots of extended aunties and uncles and cousins all around me all the time. And so it was this kind of interesting, sort of paradoxical upbringing of both lots of chaos and kind of craziness, but also like some pretty deep values in order and rules and that sort of thing. And so those were both really present for me as I kind of learned to navigate the world. And I really found myself trying to kind of be fluid and at times invisible in my life. And so my mode for dealing with conflict or difference was really to either avoid it or to overly accommodate in those kinds of situations.
Yeah.
So it's, it wasn't a natural fit for me to kind of dive right into a field that, puts you at the center of conflict all the time.
Yeah.
It was quite counterintuitive for me, actually. But that being said, I really sort of learned as a young adult, in the practice, but also just kind of in my life, navigating the world. I moved to Portland, when I was 20 years old. I didn't know anybody in the city. I was pretty far from home, geographically speaking, you know, the distance, but also just culturally. I was just in a really different place when I kind of started my young adult life out here. And I really had to figure out how to negotiate space for myself. And it really required me just for survival to figure out ways to advocate for myself, to figure out how to deal with conflicts, that really didn't afford me. I couldn't always be accommodating. I couldn't always be avoidant. So that was a little bit like my personal journey into sort of thinking differently about conflict and how we and I kind of personally try to enter difficult conversations. So I'm pretty excited to talk about this, but I will say this was definitely not a natural fit for me at the outset of my young adult life.
Well, I'm guessing there's a lot of folks who are happy to hear that, because I'm also guessing there's a lot of avoiders out there and or accommodators, but probably a big group of avoiders. And the idea that this can be learned and even mastered, you know, because it's what you do today. So when we're talking about having tough conversations, where do we start? Like, maybe like, what is the what do you want everyone to know about this? Yeah.
Well, I think it's sort of like any muscle, you have to work with it. Mm-hmm. You know, you really need to, you need to work with it in order to build the muscle. And so there's practice, there's preparation. And it's all a process. I think that's the main thing, is that, you know, a difficult conversation is not, it's not even a thing. It's a space. It's a condition, maybe. Mm-hmm. It's a process that you're in. And so, preparing for those moments can be extremely helpful.
Yes.
And I think starting with, I mean, it sounds really basic, but just really getting to know yourself well, you know, figuring out who you are, what you care about, what your values and principles are, and learning to respect and love yourself. Mm-hmm. So that you can over time create a really authentic voice of the person that you are and the person that you want to be. And I think that that will then enable it to be, it's just easier to face difficult situations and difficult conversations. If you already have been invested in your own relationship with yourself.
Yeah.
So for that, some of this, this is almost even thinking about, you know, distinguishing between self and ego. Mm. A lot of times, you know, the ego sort of gets in the way, or a lot of the external forces, pressures, influences can really sort of get busy and noisy in the mind. And you have to sort of know where to find yourself a lot of times in those situations. And you can imagine going into a difficult conversation, your nervous system is also up. And sometimes it's, you know, it challenges us to be able to find our center. So I think spending time outside of that difficult conversation, outside of the moment of challenge or conflict, getting to know yourself so that you have this sort of clear center and sort of compass going in.
Yeah. Oh, so much to unpack here.
Yeah.
So self-awareness is, I think, the first step in pretty much everything. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that you say that, because multiple reasons, right? One, we need to be aware of what our tendencies are in these tough mm-hmm. situations, and how you mentioned about our values and stuff. So I think that also helps us be aware of our boundaries. You know, what mm-hmm. is worth having those tough conversations over. And then I also loved how you mentioned the nervous system, you know, gearing up for these. So one, preparing, right? And then I almost want to dive into that a little bit. There's a point in our, with our emotions and nervous system where we're geared up to be able to handle this. And then there's a point where we go into almost like amygdala hijack.
Yeah.
So is exactly. there, can you help people maybe balance that line and figure out where that point is?
Yeah. So I think one thing I'll mention too in this conversation is that the other side of the coin is to sort of know what relationship and what, you know, to know what's going on with the other. So listening being a super powerful tool, both internal, but also what is it like, have some curiosity and a real desire to better understand what this other person is bringing to the conversation. And Being really prepared for that. One of the ways that, you know, sometimes we will even coach groups or individuals who are kind of entering into a conflict space is think about what matters to you. So like substantively, you know, what do I care about in this situation? Helping you discern what is the thing that I won't be willing to let go. That's maybe the boundary that you were talking about a moment ago. Mm-hmm. And what are the things that maybe don't matter as much to me that I, you know, could probably be a little more flexible around, for example. The other part of it is, what is the relationship that I want to have with this person after this conversation? So sometimes it's purely transactional. Mm. And so you go into a situation where you have to have maybe a tough negotiation around something, and it's purely transactional. The relationship after this point really doesn't matter. Your own integrity might matter to you, but being a little less or more considerate of how much do you want to hold the integrity of the relationship as a core kind of going into this, which may actually influence the way that you present yourself, how rigid you are, what you're willing to let go, what you're willing to ask for, and sort of figuring out what that relationship means to you. And then the third piece often we talk about is it's sort of process and procedure. How do I want to show, how do I want what are the conditions for this conversation? Mm-hmm. What's going to create psychological safety for me? What are some of the kind of maybe a general agreements of how we're going to respect each other and ourselves in the conversation, and really being sort of explicit about that going in, so that you can actually kind of state what you think the rules for that engagement should look like, and maybe get that permission with each other out at the outset. Mm. And I actually think that that can go a long way in helping to keep that kind of amygdala response down. Nice. Knowing you're going to have to be responsive to whatever comes your way, but being a little more prepared about what it is that you are coming in with, and even trying to do a little bit of educated guesswork about what that other person is going to be bringing. What do they care about? What kind of relationship do they want to have with me after this moment? Yeah. And what might be some sort of safety rules that might be important to them? So you can think about kind of where the power dynamic maybe exists between the two of you in the relationship. Is it a parent and child? Is it a employer employee? Is it two colleagues that are partners in something? You know, all of that sort of matters, that dynamic matters going in. And I think the more that you can sort of just be conscious of those pieces, to help you not get too thrown off when you actually get into the situation.
Oh, I love it. So we focus on ourselves first, self-awareness, all of that stuff. And then we look to the other, you know, what about them? And then we get to the conversation. But before we dive into that, let's take a quick break and we'll be back.
Transform your organization with EANS Training. Our premier interpersonal skills training programs are tailored to enhance your organization's employees in communication, emotional intelligence, leadership, and more. We have a catalog of expert-led courses designed to meet the dynamic needs of today's workforce. With highly engaging in-person, hybrid, and remote sessions, we can help elevate your organization's performance and success. Learn more at EANSTraining.com.
Welcome back. Okay, so let's talk about having tough conversations, and we're at the point perhaps where we're in the conversation. Mm-hmm. And I loved earlier that you had mentioned listening, because I think, honestly, I think the world would be a better place if more people were better at listening. Mm-hmm. So can you share a little bit about its role during the conversation?
Yeah, I think just trying to start out in the mindset of curiosity can be really helpful. So sometimes, and this is a little bit counter to what I was saying earlier, but there's that being prepared, and then there's that being flexible.
Yes.
And I think that, if you can enter the space with curiosity and to recognize that conflict always provides an opportunity. There is a lot of creativity that can happen in the course of a friction moment, you know, or a moment of difference. It's an opportunity to say, well, maybe there's multiple ways for us to see this. Maybe there are multiple solutions to this. Maybe there's multiple routes that we could go. And I think while you want to be prepared and you want to be really clear about what you really want to get out of this and what your boundaries are, I think too, to just open up that sphere of possibility in your own mind of, okay, there's something out there that I'm not seeing yet. And I'm actually going to go into this with some curiosity and exploration and give yourself permission, maybe not to fully resolve or button up the thing, but to look at it as like, I'm kind of entering this beautiful field of flowers and I have a lot of different choices to make. I'm not exactly what's around the corner, but I'm going to actually enter into this with curiosity, which means I'm willing to ask a lot of questions. By the way, that can also buy you time if you need to kind of regather yourself and bring your nervous system back to a place. There's nothing better than saying, tell me more about that. It kind of puts that back on them and gives you a chance to kind of collect yourself. And also you're gathering information, you're gathering more insight from the other person. So I think that's like a pretty critical foundational piece to all of this.
Yeah. I love that for multiple reasons, right? Because like you said, it helps get us under control. It puts us in that more that rational, logical part of the brain because we're being curious. So we're focusing and for multiple reasons, we're gathering their perspective. We're maybe getting another perspective, but we're also gathering theirs to help us. I want to say negotiate a little bit better.
Yeah.
So then what else do we need to know about during the conversation?
I think that you always have the right to take a pause on the substance of the issue and go into those other realms of, okay, process wise, let's take a time out on the substance. Let's just kind of examine the conditions of this process right now. Do I need to adjust actually where I'm sitting, where I am in space relative to this person? Do I need a drink of water? Do I need to get some fresh air? Or do we need to kind of reestablish some of the agreements of how we're going to talk to each other? Maybe the volume is not working for me. Maybe I feel like I'm doing too much talking and the other person isn't. So I think always giving yourself permission to take a detour from like trying to figure out the issue and look at the process. How is the process working for me? And it's a really good opportunity even to reestablish maybe the conditions that might enable you and whoever you're in the difficult conversation with to actually find a path forward that's, you know, if you're stuck. So that's, I think, another piece of this.
I like that. Yeah. Oh gosh. There's so much to unpack there as well. This is just like all this wisdom and all these, it's a lot. I love it. So during the conversation, I love the finding space. And I almost, what popped into my head at that point too, is some people push to find a solution very quickly. So I love getting space for yourself. Any suggestions for when you do have someone pushing? Like I almost imagine one partner following the other one around the house trying to solve this so it's done. That kind of thing.
Right. Well, with my family members, like my close family members, I often will say, I love you. This isn't the right time for me to talk about this. But you could even say, I think we should gather some more information about that. Maybe we should bring in more information. Maybe we should bring in another person. Maybe there's some assistance that we could bring into this conversation that help us both navigate it better and maybe come to a better. And so if someone is really pushing and they have an agenda and they want the thing, that's one way to maybe kind of create a little more space for potentially other options to be brought in or other perspective. If it's not working for you to do that directly. The other thing you can do is acknowledge that they have something that they keep driving at. And sometimes that comes in the form of, I have the solution, or I'm taking a position. And in my line of work, we always think about that as like the tip of the iceberg. That's the surface stuff that's pretty obvious and pretty usually pretty out there. There's a whole sub world of interests, needs to explore. And often we just don't quite get to that sub layer. And so if you're feeling like, you know, you're kind of getting this kind of repetitive, you know, almost badgering or like, okay, you've said that three times now. Usually for me, that's a clue to say, I need to acknowledge what they're saying and I need to, we need to go a little bit deeper. So help me understand why that's important to you. Tell me more about why that's important to you. Are there other ways that you might be able to get this need met? You know, so in some ways you kind of become like their coach. Okay, I'm going to help you sort this out. And it gives you an opportunity again to just kind of broaden the sphere a little bit of possibility. And, you know, sometimes we have time and energy for all of that. Sometimes we don't. And I think that's another thing I would just offer in this conversation is, if you are any combination of hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, if two or more of those things exist, it's not a good time to go into an important, difficult conversation. It's a signal, you know, that this isn't probably the right time. And gosh, wouldn't it be great if we could all be really sort of honest about that in a world that just continues to push us on productivity solutions? Wouldn't it be great if we would give ourselves permission to say, we've got fatigue. We're lonely. I think that there's probably a lot of, that's probably true for a lot of us, a lot of the time right now. And I think that that's, you know, something to be aware of and to actually like appreciate in these kinds of, you know, when we're thinking about having difficult conversations or entering conflict, it's, you know, there's these conditions that make it really just kind of extra difficult for us to navigate these, you know, situations.
So doing our best to set up the best conditions for a potentially successful conversation. Now, one of the things I don't think people really talk about when it comes to having these tough conversations is ways to effectively end them and maybe even follow up, whether there's an agreement or not. Suggestions on that?
Well, I have a little bit of an advantage because it's my training. You know, I'm a facilitator, a mediator. So a lot of the kind of practice is in trying to help people kind of round the corner on where they're at. Simple questions like, okay, let's do a quick check-in. Where do we think we're at? Have we reached some agreements on anything? What's yet still to be discussed? Make a plan. When should we revisit this? So, you know, a lot of like in kind of mediated spaces, if you're actually in a kind of mediation where there's an agreement that's going to come at the end, we have these, kind of general guidelines for ourselves around being, having those agreements be as clear and crisp as possible so that if you have to revisit, there's not a question of sort of where we landed. So they're, you know, specific, They're simple enough, stuff like that. Now that's kind of getting into a little bit more formalized version, but you could do a really informal version of that. Like, yeah. Okay, did I hear that we agree on this? Okay, we agree on that. You know, did I hear that we still need to figure this piece out? Can we do that at such and such another time? When would be a good time for us to do that? And so reaching some closure of the moment, even if there's still unresolved issues, can be really helpful. And it's like an opportunity to celebrate like a small success there, even if you haven't maybe. And also normalizing that sometimes tensions and friction are a really healthy part of relationships.
Yes.
And will be ongoing and are just part of the fabric of, you know, the kind of very unique tapestry of our web of relationships. And in some ways, like not pressuring yourself to reach resolution on some things can actually be very liberating and enable you to, you know, maybe not sweat the stuff that you know is just going to be kind of part of an ongoing dynamic that, if reframed, could be seen as something very vibrant about the relationship.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. This has been packed full of information. I know this, we've just scratched the surface though.
Yeah.
So can you share a little bit about either resources that you have, like products or services, or any resources you recommend, and or, you know, any resources you recommend for others to learn a little bit more about it?
Yeah, I am a little less prepared on this, but I would like to offer our website in case folks would be interested. We, so the work I do is mostly in public policy, but we are a kind of a resource of various ways of sort of helping people navigate conversations in a collaborative way. And oftentimes that has to do with also dealing with difficulty or difference. So pdx.edu/policy-consensus-center, that will take you to our main center page on the PSU website. And then you can dig in a little bit. There's a number of services that are available, a lot of different contacts. So you could reach out to myself or anyone on my team. And if you want to explore conversations more about this, I also could connect you to, we have a whole network of mediators in Oregon and nationwide. Oh, nice. Who are kind of expert in this stuff. So there's no shortage of people that are out there available as resources to help you navigate some of this and even just set up some of your own, you know, systems or networks that might help you along the way.
Awesome. I'll make sure that gets in the episode description so people can click on it.
Great.
Okay. Your final piece of advice.
I think I'll come back to conflict is an opportunity. It's a space for creativity. It's a space for new relationship, new dynamic, actually a space for you to get to know yourself even better. And I think just reframing maybe like I had to do, sort of getting out of that mode of trying to avoid conflict or wanting to get through it as quickly as possible, kind of shortchanges the opportunity that exists for you. So I would just say embrace conflict, see it as a space for creativity.
Oh, awesome advice. Oh, thank you so much for joining us today, Robin.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to the Essential Skills for Humaning podcast. We hope you've gained valuable insights to enhance your journey as a human being. Remember, practice makes progress. Keep honing those essential skills. And until next time, keep being the best version of yourself. For more resources, visit eanstraining.com.